Welcome to The Other Coast, a podcast detailing the Malifaux meta in Los Angeles. My name is Jeff, and with me here is another SoCal player, Colgan.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, Colgan. So, I mean, this is a total aside from what we're going to be talking about, but I have realized internally I have been trying to vary the cadence of my introduction. Okay. And I don't know why, but I guess it's important to me to not be the same every time, whereas I feel like actually consistency might be worth more than trying to do these every time.
I mean, I remember when we first started, we were trying to do just like a pre-recorded intro, and then we just kind of dropped that idea.
Well, I think spontaneity is our brand, you know, me with the witty repartee, you with the appreciative support, and, you know, Jim with his occasional but fantastic guest appearances. You know, we would lose something by having a taped introduction.
Even though, like, all our introductions are pretty much exactly the same. To the point, your biggest variation isn't actually changing what you say. It's trying to change the cadence.
Yeah, and it's actually trying to. I don't actually know if I do, because I can't recall necessarily what last episode sounded like, but
how long have you been trying this? Because yeah, I haven't noticed a huge difference in the cadence of which
I've been trying it basically for a year.
I'm gonna say you haven't been super successful then.
That's what we need to do. You just need to like cut all of our intros together, and we'll just make that a release, and people can judge for themselves.
Oh, I'm sure people will love that.
Yeah,
I was actually thinking one time of actually cutting out all the times you say like or and putting it all together, but
that would probably be a lot of work.
Well, because I was thinking I could do it for each episode, because whenever I cut it out, I could just like copy it to a spare audio track and just export that. It was a little more effort than I was willing to put into, and it seemed like it might be a little bit mean-spirited.
I say like and you know and right way too much. But I also don't really care.
You're not really listening to yourself that often.
Which I really should be, because honestly, it's going to be the highest value content in any conversation. So I feel like I'm just shortchanging myself.
Oh, God. All right. You know, I might just make that little super cut of all your fucking filler words.
Well, fortunately, I certainly haven't ever claimed I don't use them. I do use them just way too much. In fact, I feel like I'm taking a lot of heat now for my efforts to improve the podcast experience by not delivering the same canned opening every time. So I'm feeling pretty attacked and unappreciated at the moment. That's to speak my truth.
Alright, so what are we actually supposed to be talking about today?
Wow, you didn't even acknowledge my truth. You didn't say something like, I hear that you feel unappreciated.
I got shit to do. I'm not here to like help soothe your emotional trauma. I'm trying to earn that Patreon money, alright?
Alright. Well, I guess our listeners do expect a certain standard, so at 5 minutes in, we will introduce the topic, which for today is going to be Explorer upgrades. This is going to be the third episode in our upgrade series. You know, on our listener retention, we can now probably see a plunge for everyone who doesn't play Explorers or who aren't necessarily very interested in our upgrade episodes. I would say that our upgrade episodes are probably not among the most popular. You know, those in Battle Reports, for whatever reason, they are less interesting to the listener base out there. But I feel upgrades are interesting to talk about. For one thing, newer players frequently don't use them, and not just newer players. I mean, I think a lot of players maybe kind of like they don't habituate themselves to upgrades, so it might be something they overlook. And I also do think, just from a design standpoint, you know, what role upgrades are supposed to play in the game, I think that's a discussion that doesn't get held very often, but is potentially quite interesting, because honestly, I don't have a great answer to what role I think Weird is trying to play with the existing upgrades.
Yeah, I mean, like, looking between the different factions, there's definitely like huge gaps in power. Like you look at outcast upgrades versus I don't know, like Arcanist or Guild. Well, I guess Guild upgrades. It's mainly Leadline Coat, which is just super, super strong. But I mean, another thing, and I might have mentioned this before, but the, you know, we're talking about the design space of upgrades. I'm not really sure how they're supposed to fit in a faction, because I feel like things with like Leadline Coat, you really just take for everyone in the faction. And then there's other, like Outcast, like I don't know when you take any of those upgrades.
You know, I think the Outcast upgrades, which, you know, we could talk about more when we get to the Outcast episode, I think they do have some use potentially, you know, in our game. Geez, that game was probably so long ago now, even though in my mind it's fairly recent. But where I was the Vix and you were Raspi, you know, I gave both the Ronin servant of dark power, because it gives them, you know, a bunch of movement. It gives them terrifying. So, I mean, I think the Outcast upgrades are better now than they were in the past. But yeah, they're still pretty bad. I recall at the start of M2E, you know, Guild players were just complaining so much about their upgrades. But Guild, you know, real talk here, Guild never had the worst upgrades. There was never a point in the game when the Guild's upgrades were the worst, because Leadline Coat has always existed and it's fantastic, and Outcasts were never in that same boat. I feel like the factions that I play most regularly, my upgrade choices are pretty decent. You know, Arcanist and Rezzer have the best upgrades, so it's hard for me to complain about upgrades. Well, actually, so one thing I do want to talk about or mention before we move on, which we did touch on it a little bit, is that the upgrades do, you know, the different upgrades for different factions, they do play part of the faction balance. And you know, we had the balance episode that we did not too long ago. In fact, it's probably going to be just the directly previous release, because I think this is probably going to be our next release that we come out with. So, you know, we didn't actually really talk about the role that upgrades play in balance, but the fact is, you know, the accessibility of the upgrades and what they are bringing to each faction and you know, how strong the upgrades are for each faction, that does play a balance role.
Yeah, sure. Are you gonna elaborate on that?
Well, I was gonna give you a chance, because I, you know, you were complaining about my like 3 minute long questions last time.
Well, I mean, this wasn't even clear that it was a question. Where was the inflection? You're working on like cadence, but you're not working on your inflections?
It had like an upward bend at the end, you know, like a Minnesota conclusion.
I don't even know what that is.
Actually, I don't know if it's Minnesota, like North Dakota, you know, Fargo, kind of.
Okay.
All right, well, you don't have to be a member of the Explorer Society to find Fargo on the map, but we will use that as a transition now to talk about the Explorer Society and their upgrades. All right, so, Colgan, the first upgrade that we're going to talk about is Treasure Map. I don't think these necessarily have any particular order. It's the order they put in the app when we filter upgrades and Explore Society. So Colgan, why don't you tell us kind of what you think about Treasure Map?
So I like the idea behind Treasure Map. So it's kind of like where I want to see upgrades be, where they have a very specific purpose, or they enable, I guess, a strong ability that won't necessarily exist in keywords, but can be really useful in game. So in the case of Treasure Map, the ability to remove just any marker is really strong, especially I feel like when you're playing against crews like Karis or Sonya 2 or anyone that will drop like a lot of pyre markers or other permanent markers that most crews don't have any way of interacting with.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously, I think marker removal is quite strong. Previous to Malifaux Burns, I think it was much more rare. Malifaux Burns has increased the amount of marker removal in the game, and it's still not incredibly common. And Explorer Society as a faction does not really have access to a lot of it. You know, they have a couple of models that can remove markers, one of which is a master, so not necessarily a ton of options to fit it into other crews. And then I think the Harpooner or something can move markers around. So yeah, just from what's already on models, there's not a ton of options. The thing about Treasure Map that gets me is it has qualities that you would really want, and then some qualities I think are problematic. So no test to remove the marker, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But this 1-inch range, I think, frequently means it's going to be quite AP inefficient to remove the markers, because, you know, unless the marker's been put under you or something, which does happen because a lot of these markers are placed offensively. But if you have to move, then it's probably pretty much all that model is doing for the turn. It takes their bonus action, so kind of want it to put on models whose bonus actions are more conditional or who don't have bonus actions. I mean, virtually all models have bonus actions, but some don't. So, I mean, I think finding the right model that this goes on is kind of difficult. And when I'm looking at it for marker removal, you know, I'm not sure that I actually would bring this to remove markers as opposed to like just playing around the markers or something using the two soul stones somewhere else.
I do agree. The 1-inch range does hurt it quite a bit. I think if I recall correctly, that when they first released the card, it had a much longer range, but they started taking it down because it was a little too strong.
Mm-hmm.
But it does really feel weird with the minion ability because it carry the loot has a 6-inch aura, but I guess unless the model already has a way to remove scheme markers, in which case I'm not sure if it's worth taking treasure map, can't really make use of that range with the bonus action buried treasure unless you're in 1-inch. So it feels like you have like a huge range that you can't really take advantage of.
Right. Well, and then with buried treasure, I think a more interesting way to have done it is to give it a variable target number, kind of like the
target practice?
Target practice. Kind of like target practice, but you know, the difference being that the target number can actually reach zero so that you don't have to flip. And I think that would take, that to be like some sort of rules clarification mm-hmm. in order to make it clear that that's how it would work. But if it were something like it could remove out to, say, 4 inches, but at 1 inch it was, you know, no test or something, mm-hmm. you know, I think that becomes a much better action.
Yeah, I think that if you gave it like a slightly higher TN and increased the range, it would be a little more interesting. But yeah, as it stands, like I like the idea behind the card, but I agree with you that I feel like the range on buried treasure holds it back a little too much. Because mm-hmm. I feel like if you start hitting, if that goes up to like range 3 or 4, then I think this becomes contention for like, well, I think it becomes a really strong upgrade that you're pretty much always taking against any kind of like crew with marker play.
Well, so, you know, at first I feel like I would agree with that statement, but the fact that it takes the bonus action really does mean that it's competing with something that is frequently a very valuable resource.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually, you know, I think even if it had a longer range, but not a super long. So, you know, if it went up to say like 3 inches or something. Yeah, that's an action that's got a lot more utility than it did when it was at 1 inch. But I'm still, you know, because it's taking the bonus action, I'm not super convinced that it's really going to be sort of an auto take whenever you're fighting against a marker master. I also think that, you know, Deadly Pursuit is fine, but I would much rather it had battle tempo, right? Something that you could use at the beginning to get in range of these markers that you want to remove, rather than something that you're using at the end. Sure, I mean, at the end, you could also push towards markers. That's valid. But I just feel that that synergizes less well than, say, battle tempo would.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, especially because I imagine most of the time you would want to have some kind of denial element. But if you can't get that movement at the beginning of your turn, most of the time if someone's dropping a ski marker, it's probably either in a very safe spot you can't reach or they're going to score something by the end of the turn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. And then it's, you know, we did talk about this briefly, but its minion only ability is carry the loot, which to me is not necessarily enough to where I feel like I have to put this on a minion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that I am taking this for the minion only ability, but if I am going to take this, I could definitely see trying to put it on a minion specifically, especially because minions, you know, your master or your henchman, their bonus actions tend to be pretty important. So maybe for me, it's not so much about trying to get treasure map as about trying to find the best model that I think I would want to dedicate to, you know, having to spend the game removing markers. And you know, as part of that, of course, having to move around to the markers because it's got just that sort of crummy 1-inch range. What do you think of the minion only ability?
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't be looking at putting on a minion for that ability, but I think in general with treasure map, I'd want to put it on a minion since they tend to have weak or non-existent bonus actions.
Mm-hmm.
And their activations also tend to be, I guess, less powerful. Mm-hmm. So having them going, I mean, like generally for me, if I'm having something in the role of marker removal, I want it to be kind of my cheaper or less impactful models rather than my, you know, like 9-10 cost models that are there to really kind of change game states or force my opponent to respond to them.
So I don't know if we're the ones who talked about this, and I don't want to say it in the sense that, oh, only one person or only one pod has talked about it, but I feel like in our pod we may have mentioned in the past this dynamic that some tech pieces or, you know, some, like, whether it's a model or an upgrade or whatever, but some tech pieces in Malifaux have this dynamic where they're meant to be taken situationally, but they are not effective enough to actually be worth it in that situation. And so that actually makes those models or you know, potentially upgrades, whatever. It makes that tech piece essentially never worth taking over over other options. Because even if they're not good enough in their best situation, they're just never going to be good enough. And I, when I look at treasure map, I feel like treasure map is clearly a tech piece against, you know, marker masters. But I kind of feel like it falls into that category where I'm not really sure it's worth taking, even in the limited situations where it's really supposed to shine.
Yeah, I feel like the range is just way too short to, I guess, be something you're really taking in a lot of these cases. I feel like it needs to be a very specific situation, or maybe you're familiar with how aggressively or how recklessly your opponent will play certain markers. But I feel like in general, yeah, I think it's a hard ask for 2 points with what you get from it.
Right. I mean, we just decided that all upgrades, all these faction upgrades are just going to cost the same. But I think, you know, in my opinion, that's sort of a mistake because they're leaving behind one of the best levers they have for balance things, which are, you know, which is cost, right? Would you, obviously it would be better at one because if it's cheaper, it's just better. But at one Soulstone, would you see this as a more compelling option? Like, would it go into like a legitimate tech pick for you?
At that point, I might just throw it in because the costs feel so negligible.
Mm-hmm.
That I feel like if it comes up and helps me at like 1 point during the game, then it's probably worth it at one stone.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like Deadly Pursuit for one stone, like, yeah, sure. Like, I'm okay with, you know, an extra 4 inches of movement every turn.
Right.
So I think, I mean, at one stone, I don't think it'd be an auto take, but I think I would probably take it every now and again, if for nothing else than the extra movement.
You know, I think it would be a bit more interesting if instead of carry the loot, it had an ability which, you know, you get to draw the card, but it's not once per activation. And maybe they make it like, you know, limited in some other way so that you can't just get a bunch. But my point is, to have the wording be so that you could claim, you could draw the card after your opponent removes ski markers to score. Because once per activation, that timing prevents the ability from that application. But I think if you could draw in response to scoring, it would be a bit more interesting of an ability.
If it was like remove any marker, do you think you would take this upgrade?
If it's, well, yeah, if it were any marker and it at that point, it would increase the synergy with its marker removal action, which, you know, that's a design dynamic that we don't really see a lot in these upgrades, where like the upgrade does one thing and then the minion only ability kind of follows that theme. And I think that might have been maybe a good thing to do on treasure map, right? So yeah, you can remove any marker with the action, but then the minion only ability is giving you a resource in, you know, for doing so. I think that could have been an interesting choice. Okay, so out of the three Explorer Society upgrades, you know, where do you put this? One, two, or three? You know, one being the best and three the worst.
We were talking a little bit during the pre-show, but it's like either two or three.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm leaning a little more towards three now, just because the range on buried treasure is really tough to work with.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm in that boat too. Deadly Pursuit just isn't worth two stones. I mean, I know it's not the sum of the upgrade, but, you know, it's Deadly Pursuit is the general effect, right? It's the effect that you're always going to get. And it's nice, but it's just not worth two stones. The mark removal, as you mentioned, the range, but also for me, just like the fact that it's the bonus action is a really big issue for me as well. And if it were a once per activation regular action, I think there's an argument to be made that it might even be better at that point. Because I think the fact that it is a bonus action to remove the marker means that there's just a lot of models that you would never put this on. And I mean, I'm not even sure if it would need once per activation. Like if you want to put it on a model and remove and use its turn to just remove a bunch of markers that are within 1 inch of it, you know, I think your opponent is really getting something of value at that point because you're using a model and two more soul stones to do it. Right. And you're getting something from it too, because you wouldn't do it unless removing those markers was really important. So yeah, for me, like the bonus action aspect of it is quite important. And then, you know, as we both mentioned, the minion only ability is, it's sort of this nice extra bonus, but it's not a reason to take it. So in my opinion, Treasure Map is the worst of the Explorer Society upgrades. In terms of upgrades generally, you know, tier one being, you know, the always takes like Leadline Code and Arcane Reservoir and Whisper or whatever. And tier three being like Outcast Garbage. you know, where would you put Treasure Map?
Maybe like a 2.5. Just the fact that you can remove any marker, I think, plays a lot in its favor. Because that's just an ability that's really hard to find in the game in general. But yeah, the range is really rough. The minion only ability is really lackluster. Deadly Pursuit's okay, but for two stones, it's not bringing enough to make up for that cost.
For me, it's a tier three because I just think it's a tech piece that does not justify itself to be taken even against Marker Masters. You know, I watch a lot of Vassal games. I do not see Treasure Map taken really at all. I feel like I would probably rather just try to play around the markers and have my stones then find a model that I want to use all game to remove the markers. Yeah. So we don't need to reiterate why this is maybe not very good, but I think this is a clear tier three. I don't want to say it's a never take, but I think it's a hard upgrade to justify. Okay. So moving on to the second one, Hidden Agenda. And not going to give any specifics here because it is playtest materials, but when Hidden Agenda first came out, this thing was, the first version that I playtested, this thing was like so stupidly broken.
Did anything stay on the card from the original version?
No, I think all three of the abilities were changed. And I recall when it got changed, there were a lot of upset people. My pod was basically a bunch of people who intended to play Explorer Society, and it was very, I don't want to say like they weren't impartial or whatever, but I felt like they had kind of a very permissive view, whereas I felt I was probably a bit more critical than most of my pod was. But I recall just like when Hidden Agenda got changed, it pissed off like so many people. But you know, we are here to talk about the release version and not the playtest version. But yeah, it's just I can't see Hidden Agenda and not think like what could have been if it...
Oh man, yeah, that was like easily like one of the top upgrades in the game.
Okay, so talking about the version of Hidden Agenda that does exist, Colgan, would you kind of like to tell our listeners like about it? Like, you know, what it's about.
Yeah, I feel like it has like a very clear idea of how it's supposed to be used. I do like it because it's kind of interesting. So the first ability is Backup Plan. So once per activation, if you're in an opposed duel and your opponent cheats, they suffer one damage. So it's kind of like Lynch's aura, except it has to be with the model and it's infinite range. So I mean, that's kind of nice. Like, I'm never going to say no to free damage. The second part is Double Cross, which This is also one of the things that's like kind of fun, but I'm not sure like necessarily how much value you're going to get out of it in game. Mm-hmm. But basically, if you're cheating first, or when you cheat, you can cheat face down so your opponent can't actually see what card you're cheating in. So at that, it's like, if you're losing the duel, it doesn't really matter. Or no, sorry, if you're winning the duel, it doesn't really matter. But you're losing the duel is when it comes into effect. Because you're winning, your opponent has to cheat first. So it's like, it doesn't matter what card you're cheating because they don't know what it's going to be anyways.
Right.
If you're going to cheat.
Yeah, outside of like some really limited situations. Right. So like Pride, who can cancel cheating potentially. You know, so it's like, oh, well, I'm cheating face down. You know, do you want to cancel it or something? Right. But yeah. Outside of just those incredibly minor situations, it's not going to have a ton of applicability if you're already winning the duel and so that you're allowed to cheat second.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's kind of nice when it comes up, but I'm not entirely sure how much value you'll necessarily get out of it. Mm-hmm. Because I also feel like a lot of cases, even when you're losing, it really depends on the nature of the duel. Like your opponent just might not think it's even worth cheating, or if you're going to cheat high enough, it's not worth the card. And then the minion only ability, time to act, I think it seems pretty nice, but again, I'm not sure if the cost of the card justifies it. So basically, when you reveal a scheme, then a model with hidden agenda gains fast. Getting fast is nice, but it's a minion only ability, so you know, I guess some of your stronger models aren't really able to make use of it. And the fact that it relies on you having to reveal a scheme makes it a little harder to plan for that extra action.
Right. Yeah. You don't know necessarily ahead of time if you're going to be able to reveal a scheme. I mean, sometimes you do, but sometimes you don't. So, you know, backup plan, I think, is quite interesting, especially because it works both on your turn and on the opponent's turn. Right. So even if you're defending, you can potentially use it. To me, I want to say it's an aside, but I have been quite surprised. How do I lay this out? Okay. So I personally think that the Intrepid Emissary in a McCabe 2 crew is potentially quite strong because he's got defense 7 and take the hit. And McCabe's aura makes it pretty easy to put opponents, at least in melee situations, put opponents at a -1 stat. And so in a lot of situations, the Intrepid Emissary might functionally be defense 8. Or, yeah, I guess another way to put it is, even against a stat 6 attack, the Intrepid Emissary might be at a 2-stat advantage. I wonder why, you know, I don't see that, I don't see the Intrepid Emissary hired into McCabe 2 very often at all. And so maybe it's just not that good, and I'm wrong to think it might be good. I haven't had the opportunity to try it myself, but I've watched a lot of Vassal games, and I just don't really see it done. So, and I'm not saying that players are wrong, like, oh, why aren't they using this like great thing? They're probably right, and I'm probably wrong. But, you know, I would actually like to try that, and if I did, I would be tempted to put Hidden Agenda onto the Emissary in that case. Even though, you know, you're talking 13 stones, when everything's all paid for. But if you're just constantly forcing cheating during your opponent's turn and they're taking damage during their own turns, you know, to me that just seems like a great trade-off. So I think backup plan is really nice on elite models because that's going to be getting you the greatest number of cheats. You know, if something's got like defense 4 or whatever, your opponent's going to be hitting it quite often. So, you know, cheating isn't necessarily, I mean, cheating is going to be much less common in those situations. Double cross, I mean, cheating face down is already something that exists in the game. I agree with you. It's thematic. It's cool. Is it really very useful? Well, you know, you, like you said, you have to be losing. So at that already, let's just say that about half the time, it's not going to come up really at all. Doesn't matter for, you know, things like simple duels or whatever. So there's, I think, just a lot of situations where it's not going to do anything. And even when it might technically come into play, to me, like you were saying, especially against experienced players, the sort of the importance of the action is going to be frequently known. So is it really going to, like, the dream situation is that you want to win and you cheat in a card, like a, not your best card, but you cheat in a good card and your opponent doesn't really, you know what to do. So they cheat in like a mid-range card too, and you win and you get a card, right? But I think the most common utility it ends up having is you're losing, you cheat in some garbage card, you hope your opponent, you know, either overestimates the importance of the action or they know it's important, but in fact, all you have in your hand is trash. So you couldn't win anyways. And for your four of masks or something, you get an 11 of crows, right? Like that's a good exchange for you. And I do think that that's probably the situation, the most common situation where cheating face down shows any value in the game. And I just don't think that that's really enough to justify the ability's existence. I think the ability is a fairly marginal one.
And any thoughts on time to act?
I agree with you. The fact that you can't control it, you know, fast is nice, right? I would always love fast, but I don't think that it is enough of an ability to where it's like, yeah, I'm going to put this on a minion in order to get that ability. And I feel like its other abilities are more useful on elite models. So I'm not, you know, I don't see wanting to put this on a minion in the first place. And so a time to act does not do enough to change that math.
Do you think it'd be better, or would you be more willing to take this upgrade if it was a once per game ability to gain fast as a minion thing? Or do you think that would just make it overall weaker?
Well, so being able to choose when it's fast as opposed to potentially getting fast twice, you know, I think I probably would rather have the choose once per game just to get fast, like in the start phase or something.
Mm-hmm.
I would even be more interested in something like if it had assassin. So, you know, if it kills a model, it gains fast.
Ah, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because then I do think that that actually would synergize with its other abilities. So you give it to maybe a shooting model, like a spell eater or something, right? So you give it to a model that you want to use to finish off enemy models. And the fact that the enemy models couldn't cheat without taking damage is going to make it even more effective at sort of that finishing off kind of role.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think if this had assassinate, that might be enough to make me go, okay, you know, I could see if I could find the right minion, I could see putting it on it. But currently, as the upgrade stands, if I'm taking this, and I don't necessarily know if I'm taking this, but if I'm taking this, I think I'm putting it on elite models.
Yeah, I would agree, because it's generally something you want to have enough of a threat that double cross comes into play and backup plan starts really hurting.
Mm-hmm. Also, the longer you live, I mean, I know this isn't going to be any great revelation, but the longer you live, the more opportunities the enemy has to cheat against you. And since every time the enemy cheats against you, you know, once per activation, that's another damage. So when you put this on a minion, if that minion doesn't have other native defenses, you know, I guess you can consider these kind of defenses in a way. You know, if the minion can't stay on the board on its own, this card is not going to help it stay on the board. Whereas if you're putting it on something resilient, you're just going to get a lot more utility out of it. You know, maybe in like a Yedza crew where you can sort of stick the minion within range, get resurrected or something. But yeah, I don't think in most situations it's going to be worth it, because I think it works better on the elite minions and it's going to last longer. Elite models. It's going to last longer on the elite models, and the minion upgrade ability is just kind of marginal. So in terms of ranking for the Explorer Society upgrades, would you put this at 1, 2, or 3?
Solid 2.
I agree with you. It's a solid 2. What about like the, you know, the upgrades in general, like the entire universe of upgrades?
I guess like tier 2. I think backup plan is interesting. Double cross can be fun. Like you said, time to act is a little weak. So I agree with you. I don't think I'm ever really looking to put this on a minion. I guess maybe it's like a really strong ranged minion.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I think I'm going for more offensive models. I think it can just be nice to bleed a little extra damage if the person wants to cheat to defend. Like, that's always a fun little thing to proc when I'm playing Honeypot. But I don't think it's necessarily strong enough that you're always wanting to use this in games.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat with you. I think it's tier two. I think it can potentially see play. As I said, I do want to try the Intrepid Emissary with a McCabe 2 crew and just see how that works out. Maybe it's good, maybe it's worthless. But yeah, I mean, it's just something I'm going to do at some point. I think it's not clearly garbage. So you see it taking some, you do see this upgrade from time to time. It can have some use. And also, I think unlike Treasure Map, where you might take it and still never remove a marker, I feel like it's pretty reliable that your backup plan is going to matter at some point during the game.
Yeah, I feel like it's very unlikely that backup plan isn't going to proc at least once. I guess unless you're putting on a minion that gets one-shotted.
Yeah, in which case, you were just not really very bright about that. Okay, well, so then let's move on to the third upgrade, Flush with Cash. Colgan, can you explain for our listeners what this one's about?
Yeah, so this one's pretty interesting. Has a lot of pretty strong abilities, really. So the first one is Bribery. It's a pretty unique action. You can use it once per turn, but basically if you're targeted by an enemy attack action, you can more or less give them a soul stone to not shoot you or punch you, and you just cancel their attack completely. So you're basically trading a soul stone for an action from an enemy model. And of course, this can be really nice because it can save your model. It can make it so you can ensure that your model lives for another activation or possibly another turn, depending on the game state. The next thing is insurance, which, you know, you can make back the cost of this card depending on which keyword you're running it in. If another friendly model within six aura is killed by an enemy model, add a soulstone to this crew's soulstone pool. So, you know, any upgrade that can potentially pay for itself is always nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, excess funds, probably easily the best minion only upgrade in faction. But during the start phase, this model can discard up to three cards and then draw up to its maximum hand size. And this is usable once per game.
Right. And then just, you know, experienced players will already know this, but for newer players, because of the timing for excess funds being during the start phase timing, initiative comes first, so you can cheat for initiative and get that card out of your hand, and then you can trigger excess funds, discard three more cards, and then you get to draw all the way back up to your hand size. So instead of just drawing three cards, you could draw four cards. And so if you have to cheat for initiative to win, at least you're getting that card back. If you don't care about initiative or you know you can't win initiative, you can always just throw some junk card, and then you get to replace that as well. So excess funds, yeah, you might read three cards, but in many situations, it's going to be four cards instead.
It also gives you a chance to like pretty much full cycle your hand if you still want to pay the extra stone at the beginning.
Right. I think this is clearly this to me is an excellent upgrade. But it's the kind of upgrade that I think certain categories of player are not going to use or not going to want to use, right? So because you have to give a resource, a soul stone, in order to use bribery, like there are just some players who that interaction rubs them the wrong way. Not that they think it's like bad or shouldn't be in the game or whatever, but they, because the way they think about the game, maybe they do have more of an attritional mindset, or they have just this like very like resource intensive mindset. I know I've played, you know, games with people, not really Malifaux, but I've played other sorts of games where they might have these mechanics where you can give your opponent an advantage or something, but ultimately it's worth it because what you get in return is just much greater than what you gave away. But there's just some players who, you know what, that ability, that those effects do not work for them. And so that's going to cause them to pass on bribery. What do you think about, you know, sort of the resource donation or the resource transfer aspect of bribery?
I really like how they do the trade-off. I think for me, I am definitely hesitant to like gift my opponent a soulstone. I mean, canceling an action is definitely very strong, but I think I might be in the mindset where I'm so hesitant to give that stone away that I'm pretty good at much gonna miss like the best opportunities to actually use it.
Mm-hmm.
Or I might only save it until like my guy's almost dead, but it's like, well, if I use it here, then he's just gonna like hit me with the second action and kill me anyways. But I think, like, I guess especially depending on the master, right? If it's like against someone that has like obeys or something that can only target your model once a turn, I think this can be really strong.
Right.
And I think the cost is definitely worth it. It's just, I feel like this is a card that's going to be, again, like you're going to have to be a lot more comfortable with the game in general before you start seeing a lot of value out of this card. So like knowing, you know, which attacks, or I guess if you're against certain keywords, like which models you basically want to make immune to obeys or something like that. And when is the time to actually hand over that resource? Because I think in some cases you might end up just gifting a lot of your stones to the opponent and denying attacks that aren't really worth denying. So I think it can be really rough in that you can kind of dig your own grave, I think, fairly easily with this card if you don't really understand all the implications of what's going on.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. This isn't, you know, Leadline Coat, give you something armor, you don't really necessarily need to understand that much about the game to see how great that is.
Mm-hmm.
But Bribery, it's only usable once per turn. So, you know, if you give a Soulstone away to prevent an attack and maybe you survive that activation, but the next activation you die, you know, was it worth it? Of course, it's going to depend. It's all very situational. But frequently, it's going to be like, you know, no, it wasn't really worth it. And you would have been better off not doing it. I frequently have heard people say, well, if you would stone to prevent damage, then you should stone to prevent an attack. Because, yeah, you are giving your opponent a Soulstone, but there's only so many Soulstones people can use. And you know, one Soulstone, it's nice to have, but it's not the biggest deal in the world. You know, I've heard kind of that argument. But the thing is, stoning to prevent is a capability that already exists if you're a master or a henchman, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas this ability, you have to pay two Soulstones even to use it in the first place. So you really aren't comparing its effectiveness against, like, its ability to protect you. You really can't compare it against just one Soulstone. You have to compare it against what you could have done with three Soulstones instead. Even so, I agree with you that I think Bribery is worth it. And I do see Flush with Cash taken quite often, even on non-minions, because that ability to, you know, just ensure that an action is going to fail is quite useful in a game like Malifaux, where action efficiency just is so important, where, you know, jokers aside, quite frequently, especially between experienced players, the math of the situation is going to be known either completely or at least to a high degree. And so anything that you have, like Bribery or like Take the Hit or whatever, any sort of defense that has no response, like there's just no way to counter it, can just guarantee that your opponent cannot complete the sequence of events that they were hoping to, is potentially quite powerful and even, you know, potentially game warping. But you're spot on, and it's not really something that I had really thought about. But, you know, I do really think that this is an upgrade where the experience really tells between players, and you know, the degree to which you're going to be able to really utilize Bribery is going to depend on experience level, I think. Insurance, it's nice, right? If your guys die, it's nice to get something back from it, but some crews are going to get a lot more from this than others. You know, I don't know if they would ever make this, but if you're a crew that could summon, say, four really weak minions per turn, that is probably a good way to recoup some soul stones.
Also makes Bribery hurt a lot less.
It does make Bribery hurt a lot less. You know, and also, if Hit of Martyrs is in the pool, you're trying to get some things killed. So getting a point and a soul stone, that's really nice. You know, because the model does have to live to get it, I think that that's another... Well, I mean, Flush with Cash, I think, is an upgrade that, for if you're looking at it for defensive purposes, you're putting it on an elite model, and at least the elite models are more likely to live longer, so you're going to be collecting those soul stones a bit more reliably, because it's generally harder to kill elite models than weaker models. Flush with Cash, yeah, it's excellent. It's fantastic. I mean, it's hard to say enough good things about it. If you spend one soul stone, you can, you know, cycle two cards, right? So Flush with Cash, you could potentially cycle 4 cards for 2 soul stones. So you're not even losing any value by taking it. And then you just get bribery and insurance for quote unquote free when you stick it on a minion. So I think excess funds is great. I see it taken all the time in Vassal games. I definitely think that I don't want to go so far as to say it's an always take, but it would be pretty rare, I think, that I couldn't find a situation to where I couldn't stick this on somebody on a minion for the minion only ability. Interestingly, you could stick 2 copies of this on minions, right? Because excess funds, if you had 2, you could use 2. You could even theoretically use 2 on the same turn. Whereas if you compare it to something like Magical Training with Arcane Reservoir, having multiple Arcane Reservoirs does not increase your hand size by 2. It just gives you a bit of redundancy for Arcane Reservoir. So although I think this is a great upgrade to put on Elite models, it's also an argument to be made to stick it only on minions. You know, what do you think about that, Colgan?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not necessarily sure if it's, I guess, worth it to take 2 copies on minions just for that excess funds thing. But I guess with insurance, it gives you a bunch of coverage to like just make a ton of stones.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think I could definitely see having it on multiple minions just for access to those abilities. And yeah, you know, being able to cycle 3 cards is great. Being able to, you know, for all the reasons that we've stated in other episodes, you know, weeding out all the weak cards in your hand, trying to cycle in some stronger cards, which is always nice.
Yeah, I mean, if you position it correctly, you can get, you know, if you have 2 minions with flush with cash and something else dies, you get 2 soul stones if you have positioned things correctly.
Yeah, and like 6-inch auras feels like it covers everything you're playing in the game. It doesn't seem that big just reading it, but oh my god, it's so hard to get out of range of 6-inch auras.
6-inch auras are pretty big. They do not in any sense feel like the entire table to me. Crossroads 7 auras are 6 inches, especially the resonance to give a free focus. And so I often have to sort of daisy chain the Crossroads 7. So for the how do you think that excess funds compares with Arcane Reservoir?
I personally like Arcane Reservoir a lot more. Just having increased hand size helps a lot. It lets you, it's really nice for simple duels since it generally gives you like, you have an extra like low card to toss without really affecting your normal ability to cheat during a game or a turn. And it also gives you extra resources for things like rapid fire or flurry. Yeah, flurry. So overall, I like Arcane Training a lot more, also because it's not something you have to think about, right? You're not like, is it worth it burning it this turn, or should I wait for next turn? Because I only get to use this once.
Right. I see the merit in that position, and I don't necessarily disagree, but I'm going to disagree. So here's the thing to me about excess funds. I think if you are able to keep your Arcane Reservoir model alive for the whole game, so that you're getting 5 cards out of it, then, yeah, you know, 5 is more than 4, which is what you could get from excess funds, right? So that it's better in that sense. But, you know, I do see people target Arcane Reservoir models, right? They do target the Magical Training model. It's very possible to get it killed turn 2 or turn 3. Or alternatively, if you're trying to keep Arcane Reservoir around, you often have to compromise on how you want to use that model. Whereas with Flush with Cash, I think once you've used the Flush with Cash ability, I think the upgrade is sort of paid for itself. And, you know, if you're drawing 4 cards, that's what 2 soul stones worth of stoning for cards would have got you. So in that sense, you know, it really has paid for itself. Once you've done that, you don't have to sort of shepherd your Flush with Cash model in the same way that you might with your Arcane Reservoir model. You know, I see people take silent ones, especially out of, or I shouldn't say especially, but even out of keyword, as Arcane Reservoir holders, as Magical Training holders, and stick Arcane Reservoir in them because they can make a ice pillar and then they can arc through it so that they can still impact the game but be at a safe distance. But other than that, you know, oftentimes you have to stick it on something like a fire branded or, you know, a performer or something, right? And you're trying to find like kind of the cheapest model you can that you're going to sort of sit back and draw that card, and hopefully you get some value in other ways. Or you put it on a model and you accept it. Okay, well, you know, I'm just going to use it, and if it dies, it dies. Hopefully I get a couple extra cards out of it. But the fact that Flush with Cash is easier to use from that point of view, I think is a quite nice perk of excess funds versus Arcane Reservoir. Okay, so in terms of these four society upgrades, I mean, I don't think this is going to be any great revelation, but, you know, 1, 2, 3, where do you put this?
It has to be one at this point, right? Or unless you're going to say there's no number one upgrade.
Yeah, I guess it would be like, we could say like it's tied for two, but then would that make the twos ones and the 3-2 or something like that? Yeah. I mean, obviously, yes, this is the best of the Explore Society upgrades. I would even go so far, I mean, not would, I might go so far as to say it's a virtual auto-include. I think the vast majority of games, you can find a way to stick it into a crew and get good value from it. In terms of upgrades generally, you know, do you see it as like tier 1, tier 2, or tier 3?
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely towards the tier 1 side. I think it's there is that situation where, I guess, like, you put on a minion for the minion-only ability, but I'm not sure how often I'd really want to be using bribery to save a minion.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, yeah, I prefer to have an elite card, but then if you have it on a stronger card, you don't get access to excess funds, which kind of hits the power of the card quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say that I think that maybe bribery could come up in instances that, at first glance, it's not like, oh yeah, I'm going to take bribery because of it, but situations that do come up in the game. So you might, that model might be your lodestone handler, and being able to cancel an action is the difference between scoring a point or not. Obviously, you're going to spend the stone in that situation. Or you might discover that it's a opponent's vendetta target, or you might have put catch and release on it or something. So I think bribery, when you read defensive abilities, it's often you read it within the like the context of keeping the model on the board, which is obviously something you want to do. you don't want to lose your model. But the next step in that evaluation, I think, is to think about the situations that come up in the game that aren't, you know, necessarily guaranteed to arise, but aren't so outlandish that you're an idiot for considering them. And so I think bribery can play an outsized role in those specific situations. And you know, a minion with that has extra value, it doesn't increase its cost for the schemes, but it has extra value because it has an upgrade attached to it. That's a great vendetta target in a lot of situations. So if you can save a point, you know, prevent your opponent from scoring a point by spending a soulstone, yeah, that's definitely worth it. But I guess what, you know, to take what you're saying, do you see this as better on elite models or better on minions?
I guess it's hard to say. I mean, I can definitely see your point. Like, yeah, there will definitely be situations I'll rise that it's nice that you have bribery as an option. You're not necessarily taking it for that on a minion.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to depend a lot on which keyword or crew you're up against, whether it's quote-unquote better on the minion versus better on the elite model. Because mm-hmm. I think, yeah, being able to just flat out say, all right, we're just going to ignore like one action or one ability for this entire game, especially if, yeah, you're playing someone with like heavy obeys or something that can like almost hard counter whatever model you're planning on bringing anyways. Just being able to, yeah, just ignore like a specific action.
Right. So what's interesting about this is that it's great on minions and it's great on elite models for different reasons. I actually feel like one is, you know, taking one is almost a given in a lot of Explorer Society crews.
Mm-hmm.
But taking that second one, even though the defenses it gives you, it's not clear at all that that's worth it. And also, because of the way building Malifaux crews works, most crews are, you know, they tend to be 8 models, and you tend to have sort of a similar amount of leftover soulstones. And so bribery, when you take multiple, it actually is working against itself because it is depleting your, you know, the soulstones you have available to give away. So I don't think it's necessarily true that you would take 2 every game. And I think if I could only take 1, I'm taking it on a minion. But I do see value, especially if something like Assassinate is in the pool, on sticking it, say, like on my master So it's hard for me to say. I wouldn't take two. In my mind, I compare this to arcane training or magical training a lot. And I have taken two magical trainings sometimes, but I don't do it incredibly often. And I feel like I would be more likely to take two flesh with cast than two magical trainings. But the second I say that, the argument shifts in my mind. And then I'm like, well, no, I'm more likely to take two magical trainings, or I'm just not likely to take two of either. And because it's not settled to me, I think flesh with cash is really quite interesting from a design standpoint. From a balance standpoint, I mean, that's another matter, just because, you know, upgrades are all over the place. And I think this is not a balanced upgrade, but I think this is quite an interesting upgrade.
Yeah, yeah, I think it has like a lot of connotations. I think bribery is pretty interesting. It could also just be like a real feels bad as the opponent. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. Nope, just an auto fail. The fact that it has to happen at the declaration of the action versus like after you can actually see what they're flipping, I think also changes it a lot. Like, obviously, if you could see whether they're going to hit or not, it makes it a lot easier of a decision. It's like, oh, you're red Joker? Nope, we're just going to ignore that. But the fact that like, it's kind of like a delay, you know, if it's the first attack they're throwing at you, it makes it a lot less, I guess it's like a lot harder to, I guess, justify handing them a stone.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure. So overall, you know, considering all the Explorer Society upgrades, where would you put them as a faction in terms of upgrades? Like upper third, you know, middle third, or bottom third?
Definitely not the bottom third. I'm having trouble recalling all the other things, but I feel like Resurrectus and Arcanist are definitely stronger in terms of upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see, because that means nine, so I'm not sure if there's another faction that would take.
Well,
the spot,
so I guess thirds was a bad way to, like, yeah, because you immediately went mathematical. But yeah, I think the fact that Explorers have, you know, one super solid option, and then, you know, one sort of interesting option, and then for me, Treasure Map is not really a good upgrade. It puts them in, you know, I think they're solidly in the middle in terms of upgrades. I don't feel that they have like a ton of great choices, but I feel like they have playable options and maybe some utility that is greater than is frequently appreciated, or, you know, some specific situations where they can get extra value from an upgrade that, you know, at first glance might not really seem like it.
Yeah, Hidden Agenda, I think it's a fun upgrade. And I think it can be useful. But yeah, it's not something that's necessarily super strong. And I think a lot of that is just with how it's not necessarily reliable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to come up a lot, right? Because any upgrade that you can rely on for value is, of course, going to be graded a little bit higher.
Yeah, well, especially because, you know, I was kind of talking about this a little while ago, but it, you know, kind of clumsily. But I've come to notice that Malifaux crews tend to be fairly consistent from game to game. Not necessarily in terms of like, oh, the models get taken, but I feel like most crews are 8 models. You know, it might be a little different if you have a ton of totems or something like that. But I just feel like most crews get built in sort of a similar way. So you end up with like 8 models, you end up with like 4 to 6 stones or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so your ability to purchase multiple upgrades often requires you to re-engineer your crew to a greater extent than, you know, you just look at 2 soul stones and you're like, oh, well, I got 52, you know, 2 isn't that much. But in fact, I find when you do try to fit in multiple upgrades into a crew, you're often making compromises in other parts of the game. You know, you're bringing maybe cheaper models, or maybe even one fewer model, or you're just living with fewer stones or something like that. And because of bribery's requirement to spend stones, now it can potentially get you stones back, but because bribery is going to be an effect that puts pressure on your soul stone reserve, just like soul stone cash would, I think it's actually kind of difficult maybe to fit in as many of these upgrades as at first blush, you know, when you read the ability, you think you would just always include, you know, maybe 2 flush with caches or whatever. And I think that's just because of the way people build Malifaux crews, that's not going to, you know, necessarily be all that viable.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think, you know, most crews, you have like a core of four or five models that you're typically taking any game regardless, just because of how they play into the mechanic that you're generally going to be leaning into to win that game.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think the fact that bribery gives your opponent a stone also makes it a little tougher, because if you're running two of them and you're already a little stone light, you're basically... It makes it a lot easier for them to just throw stones away on actions that aren't necessarily worth a stone mm-hmm. under normal circumstances.
For sure. When you are, you know, building your crew, and your crew is basically, you know, you got your crew where you want it, but you also want an upgrade. So you have to make a compromise to include the upgrade. Do you feel like you're more likely to hit your soulstone pool so that you're playing with fewer stones than you really wanted to? Or do you think you're more likely to change your crew, either to get rid of a model or to like spend a little bit less on models, but maybe still have the same model count? And I understand it depends, obviously, but mm-hmm. just kind of generally, what do you feel like you're more likely to do in that situation?
I think in general, I'm more likely to change up my crew composition, just because... with most crews I play, I kind of have like a cash level I'm comfortable playing at. Like, you know, if I'm at 9, I've like, oh, I need to put in something else, or I need to throw in some upgrades, because that's probably more than I really need.
Mm-hmm.
But then if I'm going like from like 5 to 3, that's a really hard ask.
Yeah, I think I feel similar to you. If I start the game below 4 stones, that's just a really tough place to be, I think. And, you know, even 4. Isn't comfortable, but I do think I would move things around rather than, say, play with 3 stones. This actually comes up quite frequently for me, because since I do play a lot of Rezzer crews, they have so many great upgrades. They, you know, the temptation to just spend 6 or 8 stones on upgrades is there sometimes. But, you know, when you look and you're like, oh, this could have been a whole nother model, the pressure really is on to use the upgraded models correctly to get the value from them, because in most cases the upgrades don't tend to necessarily make it that much harder to take a model off the board. So mm-hmm. if you have, say, an 8-stone model that you've artificially turned into a 10-stone model, but it still has the defenses of an 8-stone model in most cases, you know, obviously unless the upgrade is defensive, and it gets removed from the board, it hurts just that much more. Upgrades often get a lot of criticism because they do have balance issues. They're not really, I think, in a good place in Malifaux. And I, as we mentioned earlier, to me, it's kind of confusing even what role the devs want upgrades to play.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, you know, I think the tension between upgrades and your soulstone pool, and, you know, for the upgrades that have maybe multiple good uses that are sort of mutually exclusive, like, do I put it on elite model? Do I put it on a minion? You know, I think some of the choices involved in upgrades are actually quite interesting. And good for the game.
I mean, thinking about it, though, because, you know, with how list building and how you mentioned that there's so many trade-offs that you're trying to balance at the same time, I almost kind of feel like that unless a upgrade really is worth more than 2 stones, it's not really worth taking.
Mm. I could see that. It, you know, an upgrade gives Ruthless, right? So mm-hmm. the Rezzers have, you know, Killer Instinct or something. Yeah, the one that gives Ruthless, right? There's going to be a lot of games where that's going to be worth it. If you're playing Dreamer, you're guaranteed to be taking a lot of terrifying tests. But I also think, you know, there's going to be these situations where maybe you're not going to be taking a lot of terrifying tests, but the models you know you need to deal with are going to have terrify.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, you're going to spend it. But what if that model dies? Or what if, due to positioning, you know, those two models never really end up interacting or whatever? So I think upgrades, like, they're almost like a mini game. To me, there's mm-hmm. a lot going on. You know, there's, is it worth it at hiring? And then is it worth it to use a model differently than I would use it in order to, like, get the upgrade value, or does the upgrade influence how I use this model? And the fact that it can impact model use in that way, and even your opponent's decisions about your upgraded models. To me, it's those kinds of decisions that really bring me coming back to Malifaux. And so I do think the upgrades do actually help in that regard.
Okay. Yeah, I can definitely see that.
All right. Well, did you have anything in conclusion to say about Explorer Society upgrades?
Bring back the old agenda.
No, like, just no. Okay. So, yeah, I also don't have, I guess the only thing I have is do not bring back the old hidden agenda. yeah. So, if you've listened, thank you very much. We understand that this was kind of, this is going to be, not worth the time of a lot of experienced players because you really know what these upgrades are about. But I do think for beginning players, I do see a hesitation to take upgrades. You know, they're just another level of complexity. It can be hard to really understand when they're worth it. Some people, you know, sometimes people are even surprised that they exist, right? So I do think it's a discussion worth having. And if you've been entertained by it, you know, we appreciate you listening. We play just in Los Angeles, but we want to be part of the wider Malifaux community, and that's why we're doing this podcast. So if you enjoy this episode, we'd love to hear about it. If you think we're wrong or if we made any errors, please reach out. If there's other things you'd like to hear from us, please let us know. We do sort of have beginner-focused episodes, and then we have sort of more rambling but more sweeping discussions about core concepts of the game or, you know, design philosophy or whatever. So we definitely are always appreciative of any content ideas. You can find us on Facebook, on Reddit. We've got a Discord. We're on the Weird Forums. We're on Twitter. You know, all of these ways to pretend you're still in touch with people work with us. So please feel free to poke us on any format that you would like. We have a PayPal and a Patreon. And so if you'd like to support the channel in that way, we would sincerely appreciate it. We'd like to give a shout out to our backers. You know, it means a lot to us, you know, not because like $2 a month is going to change our lives or anything, but just, you know, the fact that you listened and that you appreciate it and that you, you know, want to help us out with our hosting costs and stuff like that. It's a fantastic gesture. And it means a lot to us that you spend your time listening to us. And if you do go that extra step and support the channel, that's, you know, that's amazing. And just thank you very much for that too. With that, I think I'm just going to say good night.
Night, everyone.